OK. When you shall, Boadam false a harub, hake coral scotans in the blina shop for his shades egg, taming a coral na pubble clachtish. A forum lechela, le tagask lechela. So you're all most welcome to the 2016 Scotland's Conference on the theme of communities of practice, learning together to teach together. My name is Tomás O'Rourke, and I'm the director of the Teaching Council in the South, and also have the honour of having been co-chair with Professor Linda Clark of Scotland's for the last 3.5 years or so. Just some housekeeping matters first. Note the exits in the room are the two doors you came in at the back. There's an exit here to my left, and there's one right behind me, but actually that's not usable at the moment. So two exits at the back of the hall and one here to my left. Can I ask you please to put your mobiles on silent, but not turn them off, because we are asking you to engage in the Twitter conversation around all of this using the hashtag. It's on the front cover of your programmes, hashtag Scotland's2016. Hashtag Scotland's2016. In terms of Wi-Fi, there are two networks available if you look into your Wi-Fi list, if you haven't found them already. The BitBuzz network requires you to register your email address and your name, but is otherwise free, and it's 24 hours ago. But also the Armagh City Hotel network you'll see in your list can be accessed using the password Armagh3751. That's a capital A, lowercase the rest. So Armagh3751, uppercase A, lowercase the rest. And also to note that the plenary sessions, they're not being streamed live, but they are being recorded for posting on our Scotland's website at a later date. I'm going to, give you a few opening remarks to try and set the tone for the conference for the next day and a half before I introduce you to our keynote speaker in about 10 or 15 minutes. And I suppose to get the tone going, to get it started, I was reflecting and preparing for today on a visit I paid on World Teachers' Day, the 5th of October, earlier this month, to Kinsale Community School. And they were running their own Féilte Scoile, a kind of a local school-based teacher learning workshop where teachers were teaching each other, Féilte Scoile. And over a period of 2 hours, teachers from the school taught their colleagues, staff from local primary schools, students, and myself even, about new approaches to teaching they had discovered, new resources or new apps. There were 6 workshops in total on that afternoon, and in small groups, we as the attendees rotated to all 6 over the 2 hours. We learned about new methods and approaches for inclusion. We learned about apps to encourage teamwork in any subject. We learned about mathematics, and we learned how art and history, for example, collaborated with each other and the wider Kinsale community to mark the centenary of the sinking of the Lusitania in 1915. I could go on and on about all that I saw and learned that day, but I think the most important point for this conference is that here I was seeing a school that had, in a simple yet innovative way, come up with an idea that help teachers make sense and meaning of all the other ideas and research that are out there. And that event helped them to make that sense and meaning together, collaboratively. In its very structure, I think that event in Kinsale Community School was about a community of practice begetting communities of practice, and perhaps vice versa. In short, I think we saw there, and certainly I saw, a germinating seed of an approach that could actually help us to generate and nurture communities of practice in an organic and systemic way through our school system. The question is, are we up for that challenge? And I believe that we are. Firstly, we're all here today. Secondly, that's not the first or indeed the only example of its kind, what I saw in Kinsale. Many of you, for example, will be aware of the Teach Meet movement that's been growing rapidly and steadily over the last 2 or 3 years. In many respects, of course, Teach Meet is the real-world manifestation of the community of teachers who communicate and share via the hashtag EdChatty throughout the week, EdChat.ie, or indeed Northern Ireland EdChat, NIE EdChat, and especially they congregate on Monday evenings in the South at 8:30. We also have Féilte, our Festival of Education and Learning and Teaching Excellence, which has now grown to be one of the largest gatherings of teachers in Ireland every year on the first Saturday in October. That started off as a lecture with 150 attendees in 2012, and this year attracted over 1,000 people to the RDS in Dublin. And all those are just a few examples. I'm sure you can think of many more yourselves. And if for all that vibrant energy around communities of practice, old and new, I think it's fair to say we have a sense that some teachers from time to time work and sometimes suffer in isolation. It's no accident, I think, that in the aftermath of the global crisis that reached its nadir for us in Ireland in 2008, that we've seen an explosion of interest in the whole area of well-being and a greater awareness of the negative impact of excessively isolated practice. So how do we close that gap? I'm reminded of this quote from The Five People You Meet in Heaven, which is a novel by Mitch Albom, where a fairground maintenance man dies and goes to heaven. He meets five people before he gets through the gates at the end. And the first person he talks to is a man called the Blue Man, who during their conversation states, "No life is a waste. The only time we waste is the time we spend thinking we are alone." And that in turn reminded me of the quote from John O'Donohue, the Irish spiritualist, who stated, "You are never alone as you think you are." Communities of practice, therefore, I think, are every bit as much about the personal as they are about the professional. And that should not come as any surprise for teachers. I cannot think of any profession that involves so much of our heart as well as our head. Teaching is one of the most human of all endeavors, for fundamentally, it is about people helping people to learn. In saying that, of course, I'm not suggesting that teachers need to be counselors and psychologists to each other. That wouldn't be realistic, to be quite frank. But I am saying that we should never forget or neglect the person that is at the heart of the professional. Because it involves the heart as well as the head, teaching is one of the toughest and most rewarding of all the professions. In his recent keynote event at Failtia, Ireland's rugby coach, Joe Schmidt, emphasised how important it is for leaders to simply acknowledge people. The simple yet not simplistic act of acknowledgement is so important in supporting the heart as well as the head. But there's a real conundrum, I think, if not paradox, at the heart of that rosy vision. The Carnegie Trust, along with the Joseph Rowntree Foundation, recently published a report called Kinder Communities, The Power of Everyday Relationships. And in it, the author, Zoe Ferguson, states the following. She says, "We operate within a culture where we like to think of ourselves as kind to others whilst maintaining stoicism in the face of our own difficulties. Broadly speaking, our sense of dignity," she says, "outweighs our comfort in revealing vulnerability. Forming and maintaining connections and acting in kindness appear mundane but also difficult amongst the challenges presented by life, particularly for those experiencing poverty and disadvantage." And that reminded me, of course, that last year's Scotland's conference was on the theme of social justice. So going by Ferguson, she seems to be asking us to acknowledge that communities of practice, as communities, may well ask of teachers that they reveal their vulnerabilities in ways that might be distinctly uncomfortable for them at a human level. Because the person is at the heart of the teaching professional, it can be difficult to talk about professional vulnerabilities without being clear as to where the conversation will go or indeed end. The communities of practice that I have witnessed, Kinsale, Teach Meets, Failtia, and many others, seem to have surmounted that challenge by selecting their starting assumption very carefully. In all of those events, the overall goal has been to share teaching so as to connect learning. In other words, teachers who stand up to speak at those events, they do so first and foremost to celebrate what they have done and what they have achieved. And sometimes, yes, they acknowledge the mistakes they have made along the way towards that achievement. But the overwhelming feeling and emotion at those events is one of celebration and justified professional pride. That starting point of professional pride, coupled with an honesty and authenticity about their own learning as professionals, seems to have created a space for other teachers where they in turn become comfortable in talking about their own learning needs. Those who sit in the audience at a Teach Meet, for example, as I remember this very vividly, will literally whisper out loud about how they would like to adapt an idea they hear from the presenter on the stage. Or at Failtia, they talk a little more loudly, perhaps, and laugh and listen and learn and try to make more of what they see and hear. I think the key learning for organisations like the Teaching Council from those type of events, and for Scotians indeed, led by teachers themselves, is that you make it clear that the community of practice works from a position of professional strength and confidence, in full knowledge and awareness of how much we all can learn and how much, of course, we can teach each other. And I have to say, from my own personal experience, Scotians would epitomise that for me. But of course, all of this has to be sustainable. And I remember a teacher in Kinsale, Ger Hogan, he's a teacher of chemistry in PE, told me how a teacher at Failtia told him how inadequate they felt in the middle of all the buzzing ideas and celebration and innovation. There were so many ideas they wanted to try out, they didn't know where to begin, and they felt lost and overwhelmed. And Ger reassured that teacher that if all they took from Failtia was one idea and they tried it out, that would be plenty. I think in embracing professional communities of practice, therefore, teachers as human beings need to acknowledge to themselves that they are only human and they are enough. So we can listen to examples and anecdotes like this, and we can reassure ourselves that members of the teaching profession are learning to teach so they can teach to learn together, which they are. Teachmeet and Kinsale, for example, are both powerful and growing demonstrations, I think, of the authentic power of teachers' own agency. But I think it's safe to say that we're all here today in the interest of systemic change from different vantage points. And if you listen to those uplifting anecdotes about the organic growth of communities of practice led by teachers, you may well ask of organizations like the Teaching Council and others, what are we doing to support teachers in navigating their way in and out of various communities of practice? Now, before I answer that, and I'm not dodging the question, I'll just segue slightly to briefly explore what we understand by the term communities of practice. Our conference program, for example, alludes to Wenger's concept of boundaries that can keep outsiders out and insiders in. Boundaries, of course, can also provide navigational clarity, as we all know from our sat-navs. The very idea of going from A to B implies that there are two distinct spaces that can be easily distinguished from each other. And in order to do that, we need boundaries, but as lines of distinction, perhaps, that reassure us and guide us, rather than railings that might tell us, explicitly or otherwise, that we are not welcome. Of course, if our daily journey was just about getting from A to B, this would all be pretty straightforward. But our daily journey is, in fact, a multiplicity of journeys that has a clear beginning, we wake up, a clear end, we go to sleep, but a chaotic, if not overwhelming, phase in the middle, where our journeys and those of so many other people weave, overlap, sometimes crash into each other, sometimes ignore each other, and sometimes, hopefully, augment each other. And when you layer that on top of recent insights into the fluidity of teachers' professional identities, how they change over time, on top of new understandings of where teaching and learning are rooted in the space and time of school, to work towards a shared understanding of communities of practice and their practical implementation can seem fiendishly complex, if not a hopeless task. So why do we bother? Firstly, because education, as I said, is about people helping people to learn, and therefore communities are, thankfully, an inevitable facet of our education landscape. And if they are, I think it behoves us all to do all we can to ensure that those communities that we are members of work as well as they possibly can. It'll make life a lot easier for us all, firstly, but more importantly, it will enhance the quality of learning for teachers and learners alike. I think that the key here is to reflect deeply on what we expect from our communities of practice. Do we want the straight line of perfection, a clear tick, the A grade of an objective achieved, the verticalization of policy, as Etienne referred to earlier on? I'm not sure how realistic, sustainable, or indeed, more importantly, a desirable such a mindset is. I have four daughters and children at home, and if they've taught me nothing else, and they have a way to go yet, they're quite young, they've taught me that life is messy and life is beautiful. Carol Campbell touches on part of that lesson in a piece she wrote for ERA on policy development and implementation and how it really is a messy business. So before national organisations like the Teaching Council or SCOTUS begin to wade in to support communities of practice, we need to be clear as to what the needs are and what we're getting ourselves into. I think a more sustainable vision is that which has been articulated by our first keynote speaker here this afternoon, Graham Donaldson. He has spoken in the past of the choice between strategic exploration on the one hand and faithful implementation on the other. And a recent OECD blog on the interesting concept of wicked problems has spoken very clearly of how we need to wean ourselves off the clean and neat concept of policy solving problems and look more towards the idea of sustaining adaptive solutions. So I think that organizations, to come back to that question, what can we do, that organizations such as SCOTUS and the Teaching Council can help teachers navigate their way in and out of the many communities of practice in a number of ways. Firstly, we should state clearly, again and again, that such movement is a healthy part of professional learning. I learned today via the journal.ie that Bob Dylan, for example, the American songwriter, has won the Nobel Prize for Literature. I think it's a very clear testament to how we are coming to recognize the rich learning that can accrue from crossing boundaries of demarcation as traditionally understood. Secondly, we should provide maps, both conceptual and real and practical, that can assist teachers in making those journeys. And again, I'm reminded of the conference of SCOTUS 2 years ago, I think it was, on the theme of always learning, always teaching, making the journey. And thirdly, and probably most practically, we need to work with departments of education, North and South, and stakeholders to ensure that teachers have access to space and time that is necessary for those journeys and to reflect on them. And I'm reminded of the comments from John Coolan, for example, on the teaching contract at Failsha some weeks ago. And if there are other ways in which we can help, please let us know at this conference and any time afterwards. So over the next day and a half, look out for that one idea, that one insight that fills your heart and sparks your mind, and take it back with you and do make more of it, as the teachers that I've seen do themselves. Before I come to introduce our keynote speaker, bear with me for two more minutes. This is my last formal opening address as co-chair of Scotians, and I want to take this opportunity to very sincerely and warmly thank my Northern co-chair, Professor Linda Clark. Linda, you and I think, have formed our own community of learning and practice in a dialogic way, let's say, over the past 3 years. You've taught me much, and I hope I've reciprocated that. And for your good cheer, steady hand, and companionship in sharing this wonderful network, I thank you most sincerely. Thank you very much. I'd like to also thank all the members of the steering committee, both currently existing and those who have left over the last 3.5 years, for your companionship, your support and your work, and to wish all the best to our incoming co-chairs, that's Dr. Noel Purdy and Professor Kathy Hall, all the best in their new roles. And now to our first keynote address. I think Graham is one of those people, after you've met him for the first time, you feel like you've always known him. I've heard him speak on a number of occasions, and I think the honesty, the breadth, the depth and the clarity of his thinking is always refreshing. He previously headed up Her Majesty's Inspectorate from 2002 to 2010. He's currently a key advisor to the Welsh Assembly Government on its current education reform programme. He produced the report in 2011, Teaching Scotland's Future, which made 50 recommendations about teacher education, all of which were accepted by the Scottish Government. We remarked earlier on over lunch how there seems to be a Celtic arc of consensus emerging between Scotland, Wales, Ireland North and South on teacher education. And if that Celtic arc is there, I think Graham has played no small part in actually supporting it on an ongoing basis. He's also worked, of course, as an international expert for the OECD, and he's currently a member of the Scottish First Minister's International Council of Education Advisors. So can I ask you to give a warm welcome to Graham as he speaks to us now on the topic of From Ambition to Reality.